Guam, civil priority. Isolation now in effect. To avoid the risk of contamination, please stay indoors and await further instructions.
Good evening, Tribe World. It's George here. I'm back once again with another fantastic guest. None other than creator, legend of the Tribe. None other than Raymond Thompson. How are you this evening, Ray?
I'm not too bad, thanks, George. It's my morning, though. Of course, you're in England. I'm here in Australia, and it's very early in the morning and quite late in the night for you. And how are you, George? It's amazing since we last spoke. When was it? About November, was it?
Yeah, it was around November, December time. I can't believe sort of what's changed since December. How the world changed after our last conversation. It's just been a bit tribe-esque, hasn't it? So to speak.
I've been thinking about that actually. Who would have ever thought when we were speaking about the launch of AJ's latest book, the Tribe Revolution? Who would have thought that, what is it, 6, 7, 8 months later, that the whole world has gone tribal? You know, and how are you coping, George? What have you been up to since then? You've been how is it in the UK? Are you not in lockdown anymore, or you're able to go out and about?
Yeah, not in lockdown. We only were kind of in lockdown for a very short period. I've kind of been working the whole time from home, so there's not been that much change really. But we are starting to get things back to normal here, which is great. It's great to get normality. But it was definitely certainly an experience. I think it's something that I just can't believe has happened, really. It's just been such a shock to everybody. But luckily, we seem to be on the up now in England, which is great.
Yeah, that I'm here. I'm actually stranded in Australia. I was, I came out to Australia January, February, on a cruise. And I was going to, I have a holiday home in Australia, in a province, Queensland. Our Australian listeners will know it's on the Gold Coast and a beautiful part of the world, and I spend a bit of time out here normally just on holiday. But I came, and of course COVID happened, and then the borders were locked down, and so I'm still here, and George, I don't know if you've listened, but I've been it's been an interesting time. I've been doing a lot of podcasts with the cast, and I think a lot of our tribal brothers and sisters around the world have enjoyed that. I've certainly enjoyed the opportunity to have a chat with them, and really all thanks to you. You over the years have always been chasing me up to do a podcast, and so that kind of gave me an idea. I thought, I was going to have, I didn't know who would host it, and I'm not the best interviewer in the world. I'm normally used to being interviewed, but I've enjoyed it, and the cast have been
terrific.
And George, what? So your routine is okay, and some of the listeners might wonder what's happening in Australia. It's still going very well. That unfortunately, up in the province of Victoria, they had a second wave, and so people are still kind of in lockdown there. Down here in Queensland, which is a different province, there's a few active cases, but. And again, a bit of a second spike and in New Zealand had 100 days with no cases, but there was a bit of a spike there. So, I've been speaking with some of our cast who are doing the audiobooks, and they're stranded at home now, and that's delayed that by a little bit, because they can't get out and about for the recording. So it just takes time, doesn't it, really? You just got to keep going and keep safe and well. And I hope all of our listeners are all happy and safe and well. And George, just one thing, you'll probably hear birds. I should apologize to you and our listeners. Outside, right, speaking with you. And I have a little Florida room, so to speak, which is in the garden. And it's a good Wi-Fi signal, but all the birds, it's quite subtropical Queensland. And they drive me mad. Every time I come out, they start to make a hell of a noise. So there's nothing I can do about the bird noise. So apologies, listeners. I'm so sorry about it. I can't do anything about it. Anyway, it's good to hear you, George. And your wife is... I know she's a nurse, isn't she?
That's correct. So obviously she's been dealing with a lot of it, sort of the front end, if that makes sense. I think it's definitely hard, but it's great to see how united this country became. It was almost like a tribal most in that respect. I don't know if it was similar for you in Australia.
Yeah, very much so. I think there's a collective consciousness when we face adversity, where you know, when it's all said and done, you kind of you know, shoulder to shoulder, you kind of unite, don't you? And you
do
out for each other, and that's very important. And you know that yeah, it is. It's but I mean, well done to your wife. I mean, it's essential workers, and what brave people. I mean, to keep everything going, whether it's stacking shelves in the supermarket, and you know, it's you know, that's what's a sobering reminder, really, I think, to everybody, where you realize the nurses and doctors, I mean, they're heroes, really. And
yes, they are.
You know, I really admire that very much indeed.
Definitely. I think what I think I've quite enjoyed about lockdown, definitely, as you said, is your retro podcast with the old cast. It's just great so many years on to hear what they're up to and what they're doing now.
Yeah.
And it really, it's gone full circle, almost hearing it with yourself. Obviously, you had them as actors in this fantastic show many years ago. And to hear what they're doing now, and just to hear that rapport between you all now, still, it's almost like it's yesterday. It's just amazing how quick time's gone since. But it's just really great to see that new content out there.
You know, time is an interesting thing, isn't it, really? That, I mean, time is just quite amazing. And it does, it seems like yesterday, you know? And we pick up just like a family, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like everybody involved, and it does extend through the fandom. You know, where, you know, like I said, it's hard to put the finger on it. It's very special, though. It's really, and yeah, I think the tribe, just the theme of the tribe, the actual series, as we're living it now in a derivative way. I mean, not an exact way, but when you do face adversity, there is this collective consciousness. And it's, you know, you kind of... face those things together. Like, I know what all the UK are feeling, Sweden, all over the world. We're all facing similar things. And, you know, I was speaking with somebody in India yesterday and doing one of these Zoom meetings. You know, it was a business meeting and people who are wanting to film something in New Zealand and they're locked down in Mumbai. And it's amazing when I was thinking, my God, amazing technology. Here am I speaking with these people in Mumbai there, and I can relate to what they're feeling because I'm feeling the same thing. They're locked in, they're shut down, they're stranded, they can't get out and about, they're facing, you know, a very, very frightening little thing that you can't even see, touch. I mean, it's existential. It's quite profound, really. And again, they're... medical, like your wife, George, they're the wonderful, yeah. And yet when you think of some of the poor people in poverty there and how this is affecting the world, I mean, it's not just the health, it's mental health, you know?
And yeah, no, I understand that.
Yeah, and George, I'm sorry to go on, but I mean...
that's fine.
Talking about audiobooks, which we were, before we were recording, that, you know, I do get a lot of emails where people are saying, you know, I don't know if anybody's read the books, but if they've read My Keeping the Dream Alive, and I refer to the kangaroos, and people are saying, the kangaroos, till there they are. And I'm sitting right now looking at these kangaroos at the bottom of my garden. And they normally, you know, start to, when I do my workout, I mean, if you can imagine a very unhealthy old dude here, the youngest teenager in town, doing my workout, these kangaroos kind of look at me very puzzled. And
it's fine. So obviously you've mentioned audiobooks, so clearly that was a massive announcement to the whole tribal community, that we're going to have the books in audio format. And not just that, you're not just going to have somebody narrating, we don't know, you're going to have the old cast narrating. For me personally, it's really exciting. It's bringing the show back alive. And the people you've announced so far as cast readers, it's going to be really, really great. Can I just ask you, will each of the books have the same narrator, or is it going to be a set amount of cast per book, please?
Basically, just so you know how it all came out, George, it's quite interesting that, you know, as you know, we've had quite a few tribe books out, AJ's books, my own book, Harry did, Birth of the Mole Rats. And And audiobooks I'd never really considered. You know, normally publishers ask the author if they will read it, you know, and it was something I wasn't really interested to do and didn't think there'd be a market, I mean, for it, you know. But when I was doing the podcasts and we were talking about the books, and occasionally, you know, my assistant was saying, well, there's been a lot of comments, you know, and then I had to peek. I looked at some of the comments, and so it was actually the Tribe fans' ideas, you know, to they were saying, oh, it would be great to have an audiobook, and if, you know, they all have different favorite, you know, sorry, they have favorite characters, and people would say, I'd love Caleb to read or somebody to read. So I just thought, hey, maybe it's possible to do that. And George, I'm very interested. Yep. I've always loved radio drama, and you're too young to remember, but, you know, I loved War of the Worlds by Orson Welles. It was quite an amazing radio. It was like a radio drama before television. Yeah, and it you know, had music and effects, and it's almost like listening to a movie without seeing it, if that makes sense. And and it's a dying kind of art form these days. But I mean, podcasts now, in my days it was interviews, you know, radio interviews. Now it's podcasts. But and I thought, wow, I wonder if it's possible to do a hybrid. So in a way we'd put on effects and music and almost have you know, I mean, it's impossible to get all of the cast, you know, just economically and time and schedules, it would take forever to, but I thought, I wonder if there's a midway. So to answer your question, you know, we've got key core cast members and some will read their own parts and we'll have some neutral reading other parts. It's almost like, you know, if Beth or Trudy or Zoot or whoever was relaying to you or to the fans what actually happened, they would say, and Suit did this, or, you know, and you never, you know, like Celine said that, and she was doing this, and do you see what I mean? So,
yeah, no, definitely.
Bring it to life, and we'll have two versions, really. So, there will be one which will be your normal audiobook, which will be available on Amazon and wherever you normally get it. But I'm going to do another version with the music and effects so that...
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah. So it's a mammoth undertaking. It's a crazy undertaking. I mean, everybody, you know, everybody said, oh, no, you're crazy. Don't do that. It's, so we got a team, you know, we've got sound designers and we'll be doing music cues and sheets so that somebody, you know, I hope it will really bring it to life, really, to... In a different way, and it may not, it all may turn out to be a disaster, George, but it's something I'm intrigued. It's different, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah, so
it's like the test reading that Matt Robertson done Slade. I felt it looked incredible. It sounded kind of incredible. And it's just amazing. Like, I've obviously read the books, but to see them with actual Tribe cast performing them, it's just almost like watching the show again, just like I was back sort of when the show was on, which is fantastic to see.
Right. No, I mean, they're you know, it is. It's just, I mean, all of the cats are so talented and very passionate. And that they, you know, I can tell you that, you know, they're sending chapters as they're coming off the line. And it brings it into a different dimension. It's really quite quite amazing. But that's going to be interesting, George, when they hopefully will have them all available, you know, around maybe November, December time, you know, that. And then in addition to the three AJ's books, we're doing Birth of the Mallrats as well. And I've been approached to do also the Keeping the Dream Alive. So that's the Tribe autobiography, so to speak. So we'll be doing that. And that will be available, yeah. So
That's fantastic news that it's going to be potentially this year. That's really soon. So I think a lot of people know what they're going to have on the Christmas list this year already. So thank you for that fantastic information. Just kind of going to go on to another bit of massive news that broke this year, which was the release of the Tribe game that's coming out. So for me, I was really, really excited. It's certainly something different. It's something that, with the whole lineage theme of the show, I think it's going to be epic. I'm really looking forward to seeing it. Just got a few questions about the game. and just it's great while I've got you here just to ask them, really. So I'll start with the first one. It was do you know, please, Ray, if the tribe's got a the tribe game has got a name yet? Has it been named?
Not yet, George. No, but we're you know, we're working on that, and yeah, not an official name, so to speak, right now. But we'll announce that as soon as we discover one.
Nice, brilliant. And just another one as well. Do you know sort of what time period the game's going to cover? I understand it was originally going to be season one. Do you know if that's going to go as far up to season two, or is that going to be like a separate add-on?
Yeah, what we're doing, I mean, and I should give a shout-out to our game developer. She's enormously talented and lovely to work with, and is very, you know, very pedantic and very keen to, you know, honour the creative integrity of it, and that's fabulous. I mean, and George, I must confess, I'm quite, I'm not a gamer. I don't play the video games, so I'm not very, but we do have a team of young people also involved in this who are gamers and very much into it. And that's between our developer and the team, that they're making sure that those, I mean, if you're a gamer, I hope you'll be pleased with it. So really what they're, you know, we're kind of going up to, we're hoping to get a demo available, which will be out, I hope, by Christmas. And that will be up equivalent to maybe the first 8 episodes, you know, when Zoot dies. And then once we continue developing, because it takes a long time, George, as you can appreciate, to get this done, that the actual, the first game will be season one. Then we'll have add-ons for season 2, 3, 4, 5, then the books. And so it will be an ongoing thing, you know, the storylines. And it will enable the player, you know, to kind of interact, to join the Mailrats, have their own tribe, to, you know, it's a very exciting, and they can date if they want to. They can date, they'll have quests, tasks, and dangers, and different things that they have to do. And but the fundamental storyline will mirror the evolution of the tribe as we know it, you know, so you can tap in and out, and it's very exciting, and it's
sounds great.
Yeah, it is. It's really in fact, I'm just making a note, we should probably, I think, for the tribe fandom, I'll have a chat with the gaming, with our developer, and see if we can you know, give some updates visually. We can maybe do another podcast. Hi, it's Ray here on another day. I'm sorry to confuse things, but I'm hijacking poor George's podcast, because I was quite aware that with the questions that George asked, I wasn't able to answer totally fully. And we're currently doing a gaming meeting today, and we've got the team and our developer online. So I just thought, just to add a bit of extra flavor, and George will listen to this and think he's on drugs or something, or he's drunk too many beers. He will say, when did we record that? But so George, forgive me for just interrupting for maybe a minute, but I just wanted to give our tribal brothers and sisters around the world, and we'll do a separate post at one point to give them a full update. But you know, we were just discussing an entry point to New Zealand. What was your point there? Maybe you could bring that up, and maybe you, Crystal, you could answer it, and we'll put some visuals on the screen. But what was your point about the entry point, NZ?
Just wondering how it would be easy to walk into a building, how to know which buildings to walk into, or rooms, so on and so forth. What makes it easy to walk into?
And Crystal, your response on that is?
There's going to be actual indications, like some kind of an arrow or a portal-looking thing to indicate to the player that this is an enterable section of the map that they can go to.
Okay, that's good. And Australia, you were asking about Easter eggs.
Oh, yeah.
Three Easter eggs. I'm starting to sell. I love chocolate. So you're not referring to chocolate.
No, anything food related. Yeah, we like our baked beans and ketchup. Is there baked beans and ketchup? Any sort of We've seen it on screen and the some of the different references used in the series, like any viewer or fan would recognize. So just wondering how much of beyond the characters, what are the non-character things that might sort of seep into the game that we'd say, aha,
You were mentioning about Mandalorian, which is a terrific...
Yeah, I think Mandalorian, to their credit, have recognized the lore
universe,
and that kind of universe, and of many things that fans and viewers would recognize from the movies. And so similarly, just whetting the appetite for ketchup and beans and anything else for that.
Now, Chris, I did, in fairness, mention in the podcast with George about Tribe Master, I've revealed that, which is exciting. But what we're discussing today is just some, is it possible that eventually there will be some things that are peculiar to our tribe universe? I mean, such as what, Israel, what were you mentioning?
Oh, like brand 9 food, perhaps, that type of thing. Yeah, just checking.
And what else?
Oh, yeah.
And what else?
The cow, maybe the walk in the fires at the front of the mall.
Yes, and I was also wondering, I mean, some of the fans will laugh when they say, I'm asking, is there any chance of getting an owl in there and a moon? Because I've become infamous about I used to drive the editors mad by putting in owls and moons. And in all seriousness, so there will be things that are honor the in the Easter egg way the universe, Crystal.
Yeah, there are lots of nods to different series. There's lots of nods to different visuals that are going to be in the actual game itself. You might not see it whenever things are displayed on Facebook for leak for the fans to see, but trust me, they're there. You're probably going to be able to, go to a cooking base and make those beans and toast that, on the burnt crackers. So yeah, there's lots of nods, and it's up to the player to kind of look and see if they can find them all.
No, that's great. Then, well, I'll get back to George's podcast. This is just a quick intro. And for anybody listening to the podcast, look out for future updates. We'll do a separate one in a few weeks from now, maybe, and we will be able to give you some more detail and some more visuals and background and as that. So, but it's all coming together very well. The team, and poor Chris, you've got a lot of work on. It's a lot of work, but they're having fun doing it, and it's all coming together very well. And I'm very excited when I see all the stuff that's been shown today. And we got a meeting between Australia, New Zealand, and in America today, so that's all really multinational working on this, and it's all fun, good stuff.
Just another one regarding the game. Do you know if there's going to be any new characters that we've never kind of seen before that will be like weaved into kind of the season one that you're doing, as far as you're aware?
I can give you a little bit of a. The one that you've never seen before is Tribe Master,
and.
Tribe Master will be in the game, so that's a bit of an exclusive. There will be. Eventually, when the book, you'll get the books, the characters in the books, when we get to that down the line. But there won't be any. We'll be sticking to the storylines, really. Of the series.
Brilliant. That sounds really great. I'm really looking forward to trying the demo. Really looking forward to seeing how it progresses. And the fact you said Trialmaster in there, that's one of the mysteries that obviously everybody's kind of been waiting for. I'm interested to see how that happens. I'm slightly worried, slightly nervous, but I think it will be fantastic. But thank you very much for clearing that up. Just a couple of kind of other questions I've got. So is there any kind of update on like Series 9 in novel form? And do you know sort of if there's going to be kind of a date on that? And potentially like a title?
That's a good question, actually, that, I'm due to speak with AJ sometime next week. It's interesting, George, because, I'm intrigued to, and particularly now with COVID, when we're seeing, when I look back to the tribe, the backstory, and we obviously pick on episode one, season one, you know, and you've got the blacked out van, you know, important people to stay inside. And we've got some flashbacks with Trudy with her parents, you know, and evacuations were occurring. And we had boot camp in one of, in season, whatever the season was, they all coalesced, but, you know, with the dance and the teachers wearing their masks and the barcodes in the boot camp. I don't know if any of the viewers remember seeing the actual, and it's quite weird, you know, all those years ago where, you know, I was thinking about logically what would happen, like social distancing and masks and, and the barcodes and, you know, to see who's safe, who's not contaminated, who've been tested. And really it's a long way around to say, I'm going to speak with AJ and to say, I wonder if we should do a novel, which is the lead up to what happened, taking it right up to that time we see, you know, Chloe on the streets, you know, and that, that could then examine each character and their backstory, how they came together, you know, and how they survive what we're as a world living through right now. You know, it could be quite interesting. And
that sounds absolutely fascinating. Definitely, just to kind of put that further detail into what we do see on episode one of season one, I think it would be fascinating.
Yeah, now it may be that we do a follow up to Revolution. But that would not happen until next year, really. It may be that we come back to the kind of prequel, so to speak. I mean, meaning the backstory how did they get into that position? You know, what happened, and we allude to it in the book. So originally, I was going to reveal it through the books, you know, but and we do touch on it in some ways. But I thought it might be an interesting. You know, I don't know. You know, it's just. But to answer your question, yeah, hopefully, I mean, as long as if the Tribe fans want to do it and AJ wants to keep doing it, and if then we'll do it. You know, and
that's great.
So there's lots of stories to tell. That's for sure. You know,
perfect. What I was going to say is, how many more? This is kind of quite a long-winded question. So, how many more kind of books do you think you'll kind of be able to kind of do with the overall story arc you've got planned out for the Tribe? Do you think there's a lot more kind of material to go, or are we kind of near the end now a little bit?
So, you know, there's lots. I mean, the one thing is that, you know, in the theme, George, you know, building a new world and social justice and self-reliance, all the themes we touch upon and the characters, it literally could go on forever, you know?
That's all great. That's brilliant. So a few more questions that I do have. So I've got one. So where did you get the inspiration and ideas for the techno invasion? And kind of what was your memory of filming the finale of season three at the KIA Air Force Base in the Balls? Where did you kind of get that inspiration from?
Yeah, it's quite interesting because, again, in the Keeping the Dream Alive, you know, there was debate whether the adults should come, whether we show adults, not show adults. And we wanted a big cliffhanger for the invasion, and really the production team. We went out to the Air Force, the actual Air Force, to get the big plane and the parachutists. You know, the people that were and it was really, you know, it's interesting, George, when. You know, when you marry logistics with the creativity, in other words, there was many, many things that were written or that I wanted to do that we didn't really have the budget to do or couldn't do, so we had to amend it. Equally, there were some things where we thought, oh, good, you know, we've got the ability to get an aircraft and get a bunch of skydivers. We can kind of write a scene around that. And that's where it kind of comes. So it's inspiration and sometimes perspiration and sometimes need, you know. So the creative tiller of the vehicle on the journey alters according to a lot of things, you know, cast, if somebody's sick, if they're unhealthy, if they, you know, if we've broadcasters' notes or sometimes the audience, you know. Broadcast, yeah. So look, the audience don't like this or that, or sometimes regulatory bodies, you know, where, you know, we weren't allowed to get too much into the storyline of Celine and May, you know, in those days, the regulatory bodies, as crazy as it sounds, you know, we were prohibited by examining, you know, themes of, you know, gay relationships or transgender or whatever, you know. Now it's a little more free and rightly, you know, I mean, it's, I don't think creative people should be inhibited by, you know, but so yes, it's a number of ways, really. And then the second part, how did I feel? Yeah, I felt really strange because I didn't, you know, I always thought there would be a sequel. I thought there'd be movies. I thought it wouldn't be the end. It was the end of the beginning, so to speak, and that it would go on. So I didn't feel, I know the tribe felt a bit strange, you know, that they, the cast, they felt, knowing it was the last scene when they were going on the boat, you know, and, but yeah, like it's, but it goes on, you know, we keep going, really. And yeah.
Thank you for that. No, thank you for sharing that. Also, another kind of question we got is about this screenplay. I remember ages ago reading about you working on a screenplay, and kind of in your book you do hint about it. What kind of happened there?
Okay, that's a good question. And George, what I might do, if there's of interest, I might do a volume two, so to speak, and I might actually also release the screenplay. In the book, it was a works in progress, and I can reveal what is in the book wouldn't have been in the actual final screenplay. You know that when you develop, and again, I hope this isn't boring to a lot of our listeners, but the industry is very, very, I mean, there's a thing called development hell, you know, and when you're developing something, it's hell, you know, because it can go on and on and on. And, you know, and I understand that because to underwrite production costs to a movie, you're looking at over $100 million sometimes, you know. And if it was me, I'd write a check and do it tomorrow, you know. But the truth is, you know, you've got to raise production finance just even practically to, and it's even a television series is enormously expensive. And that money, people don't work for, you know, it's just what it is. So it's a lot of work. So so the actual screenplay, you know, I had so many different versions, and that screenplay in the book isn't the version, but it was shown. I put it in there just to show the process. You know, at that particular time, that's what I was working on, and subsequently, since that book, from that time until this time, there's been a lot more versions. Until I finally kind of got the version that I thought would work. And that's what I might release and publicize, just so that people, you know, our fans, if they're interested, they can read it, you know.
That sounds great. We're going to kind of go to some of our listener questions now. So we've had quite a few questions, and I appreciate everybody sending the questions in. I'm going to start with the top one. So, hi, Ray. I hope you're well. Just in case there aren't any more books, can you tell us now what happened to Danny? I'm so glad Bob the dog found his forever home with you, and he was a very lucky boy. Just from hearing how you talk about him, it's so obvious how much you loved him. Keep the dream alive, and that's from Victoria Lawson.
Good morning, Victoria, or good evening. Thank you for your question. I'd love to tell you what happened to Danny right now, but it might ruin the next book. So if you don't mind, I'll refrain from getting in too much detail. We do know, obviously, what happened in our kind of story sense. But I shouldn't really, you know, I'll get hounded by everybody with spoilers if I do that. And yeah, re-Bob the dog. Yeah, Bob had a wonderful life, a retirement on the vineyard, I love dogs. I love Bob, as you're rightly saying, and probably you have some pets yourself. Do you have pets, George, as a matter of interest?
Yeah, we've got a cat.
Yeah, and what's the cat's name?
Mia. She's looking at me right now, actually, across the room.
That's weird. I had a cat called Mia as well, you know, but you know, you do, they become part of the family, don't they? And Bob, I mean, even to a lot of our listeners, they would have loved Bob and loved all the animals, you know. But so Bob had a great life, and I miss him dearly. He used to travel back and forth between Australia and New Zealand. He was quite amazing, really. And I miss him.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. We've got another one here. So, hello, Ray. First off, massive thanks for doing the podcast. They've been extremely enjoyable. My question is, with hindsight, had you known from the outset of production that season 5 would be the last one on television, would have you done anything differently, such as told any stories that you may be keeping back for the future seasons, have a different ending, or do you think it would be the same as kind of what you've shown? And that's from Mark Humphrey.
Good. Hi, Mark. Thanks for that. That's an interesting question. No, Mark, I would have. I think we would have done the same kind of evolution. As I say, it kind of, you know, I have overviews of story arcs, and that's kind of a framework of what will happen. But it's also an organic process, you know, that, you know, because you never know once you actually get into production. So, and as we'll show, that some casts were unhappy, some had exams, some changed, you know, and logistics and finance and broadcaster kind of feedback, you know, you are forced to amend different things and let things evolve. But no, fundamentally, I mean, I wouldn't have done anything different at all, you know, that, you know, it represented in overview terms the story arc I wanted to embark upon. I mean, if anything, I would have preferred to have gotten into the technical side a little more, because thematically, Ram and the Technos was an allegorical theme about the use of technology and how, through paradise, it can become a drug, it can become addictive. And I do worry about that. You know, technology is great if it's used responsibly, but it can be quite negative but again, just you know, we had to you know, we could only do what we could do, you know, and we've tried to allude storylines to some of that in the three novels, and again, without doing spoilers, the you know, through Kami and you know, the different things that we touch upon, that kind of expands. And I would have done that in the series, but we couldn't really, because we just couldn't, you know. Yeah. So thanks. That's interesting, Mark.
Thank you for answering it. And another one I've got. Was there ever any truth to the rumours that kind of circulated around season 4 about Tribe Master actually being in the show? Was that like kind of an internet legend, or is that just something kind of that's been misconstrued?
That's probably misconstrued, George, in some ways, you know, that who is Tribe Master? What is Tribe Master? I mean, Tribe Master is an enigmatic thing. Tribe Master could be within our hearts. It could be within our souls, you know. And again, I don't want to tease you along. I know you've been fascinated by it, George, but, you know, Tribe Master is everybody or nobody, you know. I mean, it's all will be revealed. So I don't want to give you spoilers, but no, there was never a definitive where we were going to introduce Tribe Master. You know, Tribe Master as an entity would have probably loved to have been recognized. But I know it sounds very vague, and I don't mean to be
caught that's fine
in it, but it's all will be revealed, though, George. I promise you that.
Brilliant. Thank you. Just another one here. We've got one from Daniel T. Pickering. Who's AJ Penn?
I will check with AJ Penn. If I can tell you, it's a he. If he is happy to reveal the identity. But it's a pseudonym of an established professional writer who I think is very talented and lovely to work with. And I'll check with him if he's happy to reveal the identity. I mean, a lot of novelists, George, you know, because AJ also does screenplays and under his real name, and probably likes to segment and differentiate and some of his other kind of works.
Yeah.
And the problem is because, you know, he's not created the tribe or, you know, that's why they like I mean, it's interesting. My mentor was a man called John Briley, who won the Academy Award for Gandhi. And he and I collaborated on my very first novel. And his pseudonym was Treve Daly. That was actually John Briley. And for the very same reasons, John, I mean, at the same time as him writing the screenplay of Gandhi, a wonderful screenplay for the movie Gandhi, we were doing my first novel called The Number to Call Is, which incidentally may or may not, we're very close to that becoming a movie. So, you know, I'm busy working on the screenplay of that after all these years. But yeah, so it's, again, it's not to be secretive. It's just professional people. They like to, you know, they like to sometimes segment, you know, their kind of activities. And but I'll check with him, and if he's happy, I'll get the Facebooks to announce it. But I suspect he'll probably want to keep, as John Brierley did, you know, his kind of, you know, because the numbers are a thriller, totally different to Gandhi, so to speak, which was, we all know the story of Gandhi. It was a bit of a different one to the dark novel that he and I worked on together.
Okay, I've got another one here. So in your memoir, Keeping the Dream Alive, you said the original plans for season 6 would have involved an informant presenting some surprising evidence about the true origins of the virus, and this would have then forced the Mall Rats to return back to Eagle Mountain. Please, what did you believe this evidence would have been, and why is Eagle Mountain so important in the overall story arc? I don't know if you can answer that. That's probably...
It's probably a... I mean, again, if you've read the books, you'll know the answer to that question. And if you haven't read the books, you should... if you're interested to find out, it's all revealed in the books. But I mean, basically, it's like... It's even today, George, when we look at this COVID-19 and all the speculation. Was it an accident? You know, was it through that market? Was it from bats? Was it... was it genetically, you know, was it mutated? Was it from that laboratory in Wuhan? You know, did it escape? Yeah. Some people were thinking, my God, is it bacterial? Is it warfare? Is it, I mean, are the governments covering up anything? Is it, you know what I mean? I mean, and it's, and there's a lot of, you know, I've always been intrigued with that from day one with the tribe to think, you know, where did this virus come from, you know? And again, we touched that, particularly in the tribe revolution, you know, and again, I get frustrated because I don't want to give spoilers, but, you know, I've got it in my mind exactly where it did come from. And you know, so it is, it's like, I mean, we live in the world now, the term fake news, you know, and cover-ups and different kind of conspiracy theories. It's fascinating, really, as a...
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so it's, you know, but, yeah, so I probably better not get too much into that, George.
No, that's all right. Okay. Yeah. I have got another listener question here. So, hello, Ray. Hope you're well. Great podcast. I've really enjoyed them all. Thank you for making the tribe inspirational. I would like to know if you have any pictures, unseen or rare, from behind the scenes of the tribe when it was being filmed. And is it possible you can make a book of this? This is something I've been thinking about for a long time. I'd love to hear your thoughts. And also, what is the inspiration behind each character's clothes and makeup? And that's from Gemma Wood.
Gemma Wood. Hi, Gemma. That's a great question. Yes, we have lots and lots of photos. And in fact, if there's interest, again, that's, I mean, if we've considered at some point of time of doing a collector's edition, so to speak, with, in fact, our tribe developer, she has been given our architect's, our production designer's original plan of the tribe, I mean, of the ML, you know. And so we've got a lot of makeup, the pages, you know, that the makeup artist used to, and wardrobe, you know, all of the kind of, we call it a style guide. And so we do have all of that. And yeah, we might publish that. That's a good idea, Gemma. You know, that if people are interested, there's no reason. You know, we could. I'm going to note this down, and so I'll check that out, Gemma. And that might be possible. In terms of the inspiration that have been fascinated by, you know, indigenous cultures around the world. And again, forgive me if I'm repeating information, but particularly Native American, Indian, Indigenous, you know, I love I love makeup, I love design, I love costume and fashions, and there was a lot of, you know, the tattoos, the markings, you know, it's now 20 years later, you'll notice. Do you have any tattoos at all, George?
No, I don't.
But you'll notice a lot of people do, you know, from David. Yep. I mean, they didn't used to, you know, but it's now a lovely way of expressing yourself, you know, and people that have tattoos, they'll either do it as a memorial to somebody that's passed or a love of their life or a significant moment in time, you know, and yep. People they love or whatever, you know. And so within the tribe, every marking in my mind links to the story, from Brace tattoo to Ebony's to, you know, and some of the things were linked into the Abbey Messiah, which is a thing we haven't gotten into in the books and certainly into, you know, in the series, but it's foretells of a Messiah figure, a child to be born that will change the world, you know, and that's the song mm-hmm. Abbey Messiah that John Williams beautifully did, you know, all links in. So, you know, we had put in some tattoos and markings and to eventually link, and eventually that will all be revealed as well. But it's quite so to answer the question, I mean, the inspiration comes really from having a blank sheet of paper to think, how will people look, you know, what, how will they dress? And I love the avant-garde fashion, you know, that kind of funky, dangerous street, you yep. know, you scavenge to express yourself, you know, and you can have hair extensions of wire or flaxen or plants or whatever, you know, and makeup, whether it's it's just great, you know. Grunge fashion is very avant-garde. I love the fashion. I love, and we had a great costume and makeup designers as well. They did a great job, I have to say. I loved it. You know, did you enjoy the look of it?
Yeah, I did. I think it was very sort of, when you switch it on TV, I remember the first time I ever saw the tribe, you're just looking at the costumes and you're just like, wow, it's eye-catching, it's different. It's, well, what's this? And instantly you're glued to the TV screen, and then you see one episode, and then you have to keep watching it and watching it and watching it, really. And it's just one of the things, even now, it's timeless when you can go back and watch episodes now on DVD, even online as well. It's amazing how well the show holds up, even in 2020.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, because a lot of the fans will know that we've been, you know, very busy. Another side of our team is distribution, you know, where we try, and not just the tribe, but other shows we've made. And a lot of people tend to forget we made not just the tribe, but Cloud Nine, a lot of shows. And we've been dealing with streamers like Amazon Prime, you know, and some people at Amazon Prime said, oh, I don't know, people would be interested. I mean, the show's 20 years old. It's probably out of fashion. And we say, no, please look at it, check it out. And they checked out and thought, my God, this looks like it was filmed yesterday. So it lives forever because of that.
Yeah, it does.
George, it's not the 80s fashion or 90s. It's very futuristic and doesn't date, does it? And that's what's good about it. And I'm thrilled because, I mean, we've been able to, we've just concluded finally for our German tribal brothers and sisters, eventually, after a long, several years it's taken, to actually get the tribe on in Germany again on Amazon Prime, which is great. And so that literally was this week. We've just announced season 5 has come out in Germany in the German language. And as the tribal fans will know, it's been a long time. And they've been very patient and loyal and terribly frustrated. And, you know, we would have done it years ago, but, you know, for the very reasons. I mean, we had to, all the rights and the public, it gets all complicated. But we've eventually achieved that. And I'm really thrilled about that.
That's really positive. It's really positive news that finally that it'll be on Amazon Prime in Germany. I think that's fantastic for all our German listeners. So excellent. That's great.
As we speak, George, it's season 5, and it was a real hurdles we had to overcome. But once I get the bit between my teeth, I never give up. You know, and
no, it's good.
You know, so we eventually got there, and I'm thrilled about it. It literally is. I mean, if any tribal fan is listening in Germany or Austria or Switzerland and in the German language, it's on Amazon Prime, and that's literally taken like years, you know. But we've done it, yeah, and achieved it, so that's great.
That is great. I've got another listener question here. So after both me and my son got diagnosed with autism, I begin to wonder about some of my favourite characters. Bray mentioned the changes the world they lived in were the hardest on Trudy, on anyone else, but he never elaborated why. We see her quickly switch from one mood to another, then be completely oblivious to things going on around her. Sometimes she seems distant from any emotion, where other times she seems overwhelmed by them and seems to have meltdowns. This made me wonder, perhaps was Trudy written as a girl on the spectrum? In addition to this, were there any characters created with any other special needs other than Paul? And that's from Sabina Vanderblock.
Hi, Sabina. That's a familiar name. Sabina's a great supporter of the tribe, and that's. I hope you're keeping well, Sabina. Is it Sabina or Sabine? Sabine, I always thought that.
Sabine.
So Sabine, that's again. Thank you for the question. An interesting one. That obviously Harry and the writers have their own take as well. But for my own being on the autistic spectrum myself, you know, I guess, you know, I try and empathize and wonder what a neurotypical would do or say or be, you know. And it's interesting when you're writing. I did a screenplay once called The Uninvited, which was about aliens, and you don't need to be an alien to write about aliens, you know. So that's why, you know, you can write, a male can write for a female, you know, somebody 20 can write about a character who's 80, you know, but you tend to write from your experience. And so I think, to answer your question, Sabine, that for me, probably there's a lot of special needs in all of the cast. I think Jack was certainly written with or developed or portrayed as somebody who was probably on the spectrum, you know, as a geek, you know, somebody interested in, you know, very pedantic. And where Trudy was concerned, I think mental health is something that really has never been portrayed accurately in a lot of drama. And, you know, so with Trudy, I was always wondering, is she bipolar? Is she, she's certainly got issues. Why does she have issues? And again, without spoiling, I don't want to get into the backstory, but, you know, maybe through her parents, or is it genetic? Is she on the spectrum? And one thing I'd like to say, George, if I may, I know.
Yeah.
Some of the team were saying, oh, you know, there's been a bit of a backlash in the first book to say, oh, Trudy wouldn't act this way. And a lot of the listeners will know the scene I'm referring to on the boat. But, you know, when people are caught in a survival situation, you know, for example, some people drink their urine, you know, if that rather than, you know, if you're lost in the forest, you can survive. And when people are faced in a traumatic survival situation, they can act in a totally, not in an uncharacteristic way. What you do to survive is quite amazing. And, you know, cannibalism even occurs. You know, there was a true story about, I can't remember the name of the movie, you know, where a plane crash, and they, you know, the dying to survive, they ate those that passed, you know. I mean, cannibalism, rather than to survive, it's frightening what you do. And so if you're, you know, if you suffer from a mental illness, it's rather like being an alcoholic. You know, you can, you can be dry, you can be stable, you can be doing very well. And then something can happen where you snap and you go off the wagon, you know. And that's what I think, you know, for Trudy, that although she's well-developed and she's strong, and there's that capacity within her that she could become histrionic, you know, who could become frightened, who could really go off the rails, you know. And so, and to really try and really accurately portray the human, you know, we're not one-dimensional as a species, we're multidimensional, and there's different elements to us. So so it's a great question, Sabine, and something I'd love to maybe later, George, when we do our in-depth analysis of each episode and each season through ensuing podcasts, we can look at some of this in greater detail. But, I'm very proud of Harry and the writing team. I think they did great work on the scripts and my humble kind of, steering it through. You know, I mean, I always wanted to really portray each cast member multidimensional, you know, so that there are dimensions. And Trudy is a fascinating character, and Tony is such a wonderful actress as well. And it's great to hear Tony reading her stuff. It's wonderful. I mean, she's so gifted, as indeed all the cast are. But, Trudy, had this capacity of, she could turn. For all that she's strong, for all she becomes a mother, and mothers, I mean, they will protect and do anything for their children. But that doesn't mean to say they're immune from struggling in adversity. So it's if that answers a long answer to the question, I know, Sabine, but it's hopefully we can examine that in ensuing novels and get more into the backstory of Trudy to show why she's that way. But well observed, and that's a very astute observation, Sabine. But I think you'll find all the characters have their quirks and nuances, but there's no doubt a lot of them have special needs just by definition of demographically. I mean, a group of people that you'll know, people, George, that Sabine will as well, we all have, it's hard being a human, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's definitely, we have days. Going into another question, this is kind of a three-part question from one of our listeners. I will start at the beginning part of it. So, hello, Ray and team. Hope you're all well. Thank you for the podcast. Whatever happened to the captured tribe leaders, more specifically Moz, after the Technos invaded at the end of season 3? Were they used as guinea pigs in the VR experiments like Amber before she was rescued from the Techno captivity? Or did they wind up in cages like Alice, Casey and the Guardian at the end of season 5?
Again, that's something... Who's this from, George?
This is a three-part question, and it's from Anna Roshina Wynn.
Hello, Anna Roshina. That's a nice name. Thanks for the question. I mean, two elements of that, Anna Roshina, that a lot of people... It's quite interesting how popular Moz was, I might, in fact, reach out to the actress and see if she's interested to do a podcast. And, because she's very, very popular, the Moz and the kind of... But to answer your question, I mean, again, it's probably something I'd better not reveal too much. But yes, I mean, they would have been like Casey and Alice in a cage, and any strays will be... You know, they can be traded, they can be, forced to work as servants or, in the fields or in, for the Technos, they would use guinea pigs, I guess, to test out different things. I mean, in much the same way that one of our members of our team that are doing the tribe game is a big World of Warcraft fan and is working on something that... Are you a World of Warcraft fan at all, George?
I'm not. I play Football Manager. It's probably about as advanced as my game plan goes, really.
If there's any World of Warcraft players out there, you'll know that this particular week, this is around, 23rd, 24th, 25th of August, there's something that people are testing and to see if there's any bugs in this.
It's probably a beta. Is it a beta, Ray? Beta, that's what they sometimes call it. Like, it's basically a pre-release demo before game comes out.
Yeah, they're playing that right now, and so in our world, in the tribe world, the Technos, they would use people to test games or to as they did, drove Pride mad, with the Paradise and things like this, but in virtual reality, and so it's quite plausible. In real life and in fictional, that they would have been utilized by the Technos to examine different reactions to different games. Yeah, so it's a good question.
Perfect. There's another two parts to the question. So the other one was, so obviously the Technos were a huge leap from season three, but we knew very little about the expanse of all they did or the origins before the books expanded upon things. This part of the question is, did they get all their information from the former locos, Java and Seva? And is that why they decided the city was a prime for a takeover? Or was there some undercover scouting before they parachuted and then took the prisoners?
Yeah, again, George, that again, I, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to be evasive.
No, that's all right. Sorry to sort of...
And that's all right. No, it's a good question and a valid one. But again, it's all in the books, you know. And and Ram does a lot of the backstory and explains what had happened and in a bigger picture, because it does link in to the collective and the character known as Kami and that whole thing whereby again I can answer some of it, that you know we are familiar with the internet right now, we all use the internet and it's changed our world, and we imply in the books that there was another underground, and I think it was called Uthernet or whatever it's called, that I mean in the Cold War that there was and in real life that there was you know, that's where this kind of method of communication long before the internet became available to consumers was available in the Cold War in the event that there was a nuclear winter and an apocalyptic kind of situation where the governments of the world did have methods of communication and so you'd really need to read in depth in the backstory of that to understand what Ram had actually tapped into. And the Technos, and through his association with characters like Kami, and what that was all about, and the importance of Eagle Mountain and other destinations, where the adults, prior to their demise, and then the advent of their equivalent of their COVID-19, as that was evolving, and who knows? I mean, you think today, George, that we're people have said, oh, there'll be vaccines and life will be back to normal. I mean, we fictionally, as writers, and the listeners will understand, those who want to write, if you let your imagination run wild, and you would think, God, what would happen if the vaccine doesn't work? And what would happen if this is going on in 2 or 3 years and anarchy comes? And what would happen if kids are evacuated for their safety? You know, because they're immune. And what would happen if, you know, if do you see what I mean?
Yeah, no, definitely. And what it's a bit scary, isn't it?
What would happen if somebody tapped in to think, hold on, all of this trying to colonize Mars, you know, somebody in advance, what would happen if there is something? What would happen if it is bacterial warfare? Do you see what I mean?
And yeah, no, definitely.
You know, it's frightening and you can understand that, you know, the world, I mean, poor America with all of the, you know, all this after the George Floyd and all that's going on and in Portland and some, you know, some of the looting and social breakdown. It's really scary, you know. And
yeah, no, definitely is.
Yeah, it really, really is. So, and again, so we explore it in the novels. And it's something that you know is worthy of a podcast on its own, really. To and again, we can maybe have a look at that in depth, George.
Yeah, definitely.
Some of the motivations of Zoot and the locos and that anarchic, you know, kind of rebellion motivations. Why are they that way? You know,
definitely. I've got a few more parts. The last part of the Anoshina question, I don't know if you can answer this, would be, so did the Technos ever suffer the virus as well? And is it likely they found the cure, much like the Morats, that there was multiple cures?
Yeah, there's, that's a good question, that there could be multiple cures. You know, but, you know, does the virus mutate? You know, can somebody unleash it again? You know, I mean, and again, my brain's gone. What do they call it where people are asymptomatic? That's right. But they can still spread it. Does it kick in genetically at a certain age? Is it?
Yeah.
Why are some young people more immune? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, definitely.
People, it's quite fascinating, but again, a lot of that is kind of revealed in the novels, and we'll continue examining those elements.
So I'll go into the next one. So the next question we had, Ray, this was a double question from a listener. I'll go into this now. And we've had this question a couple of times. The first part of it was Mega a replacement for Ved when Ved obviously left the show? Was Ved going to be kind of the Mega of season 5, so to speak, the main bad guy?
So the answer to that, George, is we had Dan on the podcast, who is a tremendous young man, and we would have portrayed, had Dan stayed in the season, the storylines would have been different, so let's put it that way. But we had to make some amends,
yeah,
and some alterations, and so yes, I mean Mega wouldn't have had the same storyline had Ved still been around. Yeah,
brilliant. And the last one, I think the last one from the same person, this is from Kat Slomansky, sort of, as well. I think sort of maybe this is answered in the books partly, but I'll ask you anyway. I don't know what you can answer of this. So if the TV series continued, would we ever seen the adults surviving the virus somewhere? If the series continued, would we, yeah, basically see the adults survive?
That's, again, a good question. And for those who have read the books, you'll see that we reveal a little bit more about the adults and what they were doing, and they were hoping that they would not, that they might come back, so to speak. But I think it, you know, like, it, you know, the tribe was in one land, so to speak. In other parts of the world, it could have been that there were some adults, some renegades, yeah, like the Walking Dead, or, you know what I mean? I mean,
yeah, definitely.
Some survivalists, you know, who took off and to the hills, so to speak, and you know, there was one in fact one version of a movie. We did have you know, one sole surviving adult, so to speak. You know, I don't know if you saw I Am Legend. I can't remember the name of the movie with Will Smith.
Yeah,
certainly. You know, where the last person, you know, where we did have an adult revealed. You know, the but we didn't go that way. So yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, it's I didn't have a definitive really to answer the question. You know, I've got an open mind on it, and still do, George. You know that.
Well,
I mean, I as I gaze into space and think, wow, you know, because seeing COVID and what's happening in the world, and you know, you wonder. I mean, it's very historic, really. I mean, that you know, when you're my age, George, you'll look back and, you know, you don't have children yet, but your kids, and for our listeners, your children will be saying, wow, did you really live through that? What was it like? I mean, it's quite amazing what this has done to the world, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it is amazing. I think the thing is, what you've done really well kind of in the tribe is the whole affinity of without the adults, and yes, even when you tease Glenn as kind of an adult when he gets the virus in season one, that was a massive shock. And then even with the people you had flying planes going into season four, yes, there's so many things where you think if you do see an adult, it's going to be, like, it's just shock value. It would be the ultimate shock, if that makes sense. But yeah. I think it's very good. I think the whole lineage and stuff like that is done really well. I have got another kind of question as well that I've got here. Who would you say is the greatest villain in the history of the show, and why?
The greatest villain. That's an interesting. That's a very, very good question. You know, in life, people don't see things as the way they are. They see things as the way they are. So. That's an abstract way of answering it, but, you know, I guess the greatest villain is according to who you are, you know? I mean, some might think it's Zoot. Some might think it's the Guardian, you know? Some might think it's Ram. But again, they weren't one-dimensional, George, in the sense that Ram's passion was technology, you know, that and is technology, and the Guardian, it was this zealot conviction, this utter belief, obsessional, passionate way to, that he believed, you know, that the Chosen and Zoot, the word of Zoot, and Zoot, you know, who evolved out of Martin, and something made Martin. I mean, it's interesting. I was looking the other day at this scene, you know, where Martin leaps on the desk in the flashback scene, and and the guardian is watching him, and Ebony, and he's just sick when the teacher is, just rebelling. I mean, and again, it's quite fascinating that and his kind of ideology for the locos, you know, there is an ideology that power and chaos is the way, you know, and
definitely.
And with that in mind, you know, I mean, and again, I don't mean in an anarchic or violent way, you know, that some governments, and again, depending on your political leanings, you know, that some will say that those in power bring chaos and heartache and devastation in the governments, you know. I mean, America's going through an election. I know that the UK, George, with Brexit and all that craziness, you know, all of that, in my day, the war in Vietnam brought a lot of heartache and chaos and from those in power, you know?
Definitely.
You know what I mean? There are those that say it was just to invade Iraq. There are those that say it was unjust. And, you know, so those in power, power and chaos, you know, it's not just Zoot spouting, radical kind of, I think Zoot really truly believed that the world that he inhabited brought heartache and brought the virus, brought the breakdown of society, and that he saw those in power brought heartache and chaos. And he thinks, well, to hell with it, I'm going to bring my own power. And so is he bad? Is he good? We think initially he is bad, but certainly the Guardian didn't. The Guardian believed in his the Chosen, that it was the way to go, you know, to power corrupts, as they say. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. So it's a fascinating dilemma. And again, I'm sorry, I don't mean to keep harping on the books.
No, it's fun.
If you read the Revolution, I love that book, and I love the hope that those in power had for a better world. And you've read the book, George. You'll know what I'm referring to. But you know, not all people. That's the, you know, we're all different people, and we see things as the way we are. You know, we relate to things and adversity, and we want different things, don't we? Really.
I think that the way I kind of look at it with Zoot is, Zoot to me, kind of in season one, he maybe starts off bad, but when you look at the bigger picture, he went really to the mall to try and sort of help, like, his kid, if that makes sense. So when you kind of look at it, the real kind of baddie probably in season one, particularly the early part, is Lex, without going into kind of seasons in detail. But I think it's really hard if you're just going to pinpoint one person. For me, the ultimate baddie is probably whoever's created this virus. But as I said, we don't know who that is at the moment or what it is. So I think there's to be continued, that question, really. So we've now got another listener question, and that one is, hello, Ray. Of all the characters who are killed or written off that initially intended to be, e.g. Zoot and Ned, which one was the hardest for you to make the decision for? Like, which character affected you the most, having to kill or write off? Please don't say all of them. And that's from Chad Hawkins.
Hello, Chad. That's very perceptive. I mean, my natural answer is all of them, because... You know, characters, Chad, it's interesting when you write, they become real people, you know. They're like your children, you know. They're an amalgam of all of them, really. And I mean, they're all, when you bond with the, when you're in production, it becomes a family. You become very close. And I remember when Pride, you know, Nick is such a tremendous actor and a human being. And it kind of broke my heart to, and same with Ned, you know. Bevan is a great actor, a tremendous guy, you know, and it's always hard, you know, because you, as a human being, you bond emotionally and they become real, you know. So it's but sometimes you have to do what you have to do. And Danny James is very close to me. Danny, I've known since he was 10 or 11 years old when we did the Secret series. And so it was horrendous thinking to kill off, I think probably Zoot, in all honesty, the hardest, you know, because of Danny and,
yep.
And, but, you know, we had to do it because without Zoot's death, you wouldn't have had the Guardian, you see, you wouldn't have had the Chosen. And so, you know, we're always looking as writers for incidents, you know. There's no drama without conflict. There's no storylines without elements, you know, and that was a key element to precipitate the introduction of the Garden and the Chosen, and to have this ideology of Zootism, which was going to feature as we knew, you know. Otherwise, it was it becomes a bit repetitive if Zoot was only going around in the city in his you know, police car and rounding up strays. And, you know, after a while, you think, although we've done that, and we need to bring in other dimensions, really.
So, yeah, no, that's fascinating. Thank you very much for kind of answering that. Okay, we have got kind of another few more questions. So where did you find, this is one for me, where did you find inspiration in creating some of the overall cliffhangers you created? And was it challenging to come up with these at the end of every season?
That's again a good question, George. That, you know, each you're always, as a writer, as a discipline, you know, you're always trying to come up with a cliffhanger to tease or hopefully entice the viewer, the listener, the consumer to come back and see what happens next. So yeah, it was always a challenge, always very difficult. And to segue into the next, you know, like in episode 52, you'd try and come up with something to seed and plant what will happen in episode one for the ensuing series, you know. So it was always very, very hard, George, you know. But so we'd always try and structure something without frustrating the consumer as well, you know, but hopefully to leave them with enough to make them want to come back and to keep viewing, you know. And we tend always, even episodically, as a discipline, to see the mini cliffhanger. And the same in the books, you know. I mean, it's a, you know, you always try each chapter to have a mini kind of cliffhanger to keep reading. And life is that way in many ways, you know, where at the end of one day, you think, oh, my God, I wonder what's going to happen tomorrow, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. So kind of with it, so with your kind of overall story arc, so you obviously, in your head, you know kind of where the ending is. So when you started season one, did you kind of know sort of how that path was going to go, involving Techno, Chosen, that lot? Did you have that all? Or was you only really going in, this is one season, that's kind of going to be it?
Yeah, no, I mean, years and years and years ago, George, you know, when I had the actual idea for the tribe, and I would think conceptually kind of what would happen, you know, and then obviously with the writers and Harry, we'd develop it and examine it. But, I mean, you know, it wasn't, for example, where, you know, I wanted to explore technology and I knew there wouldn't be time in season one to bring in the technos, you know, there just wouldn't be time. No. And I wanted to explore religion, you know, in all of its forms. And I knew there wouldn't be time to do that in season one, you know. I had a story arc that went on long after season five, to be honest, you know, that which we've kind of explored in some ways in the books, although A.J. Penn has brought in some interesting dimensions in his own take as well. But it's an ongoing, you know, and even today, you know, you look ahead and you think, my goodness, this could happen, that could happen. And
yeah,
you know, and you know, for Bray and Amber, I mean people say, oh, it's too late to do a sequel. It's never too late, because, you know, they will become, what would happen to their kids? And
yeah, no, definitely.
And what would happen to a 50-year-old Bray or a 40-year-old Amber, you know? Or, you know, like what happened to Jack and Ellie and, you know, what happened to the world? You know, how did it all pan out? And that's what's fascinating. I mean, it just goes on. And
there's still so much that's unexplained, isn't there? That's the thing. There's still so many years on in all the books we've had and all the series. There's still, we feel like we've only to kind of touch the surface, really. I still think there's so much more probably to come and so much more that we are probably, that's the great thing about the tribe, which is what I kind of love about this new content, is that we're so many years on now, yet we are still getting content and it's still new stuff. It's stuff that certain shows, they end and that's the end of it. You never get the answers to kind of what you want, but the fact we've got this new content, we've got books, we've got the game coming out, we've got the audio books. It's a real positive way to still be a tribe fan, I think, or part of the community.
No, well, that's really nice, and it's something, George. I mean, again, I get a lot of emails or a lot of questions. Always, will there be, you know, that people say, why don't you do a season six? And we would. I mean, that's the thing. I'd do it tomorrow, but the question is, I want to do it the right way, and we have to get funded. And George, I'll allude to this a little bit more if I do another version of Keeping the Dream Alive. But up until the end of Keeping the Dream Alive, where I was talking about, we were then developing a movie. And again, I'm happy right now. I can reveal that, you know, and again, a lot of Tribe fans will know that eventually the studio was Legendary and we were going to do a sequel. And it's a long, long process, you know, where they take the rights for 2 years, 3 years. They take what's called an option. And we work with different people, and again, I can't give too much details, but for the motion picture version, I was working with a director, a tremendous guy called Rob Cohen. And Rob did Fast and the Furious, and Rob did Vin Diesel's Triple X. I mean, a tremendously talented and gifted, a lovely man who loved the Tribe concept. And Rob wanted to direct the movie. He was going to get involved if we did a sequel as an executive producer, and he and I worked with a young writer, a man called Jason Rothenberg, and Jason was a good guy as well, but sometimes, you know, their ideas didn't fit with what maybe a studio wanted, or I wanted, or my ideas didn't fit with what the studio wanted, and sadly it didn't come to pass, and that's fine, you know.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's too expensive. Sometimes it's not expensive. Sometimes the studio would want, if I said, look, I'd like to cast the original cast, they would say, well, we'd prefer that you cast, you know, they give you names, you know, and I know that it wouldn't have been good for the Tribe fans. I think they would have hated it if we had anybody else than Beth playing Amber, you know.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Or somebody else playing Jack. I just couldn't do it. And sometimes I just had to think, look, I want to remain independent and autonomous, and to do it the way that, to protect the creative integrity, you know, for myself as well as the Tribe fandom. And I'd prefer it didn't happen if it was going to be a dog's dinner of something that wasn't truthful to it. If it's going to happen, it's not the size of the budget. I mean, so many big budget movies are a disaster. They don't work well, you know, because it becomes, so George, it's interesting that when that Rob went his own way and I wish him well, and Jason went his own way and I wish him well. But it's interesting, if any of our listeners are, Jason went on to do The 100, and which is an interesting series and very successful, and it's great, and I think it's they did it very, very well. But you know, it's just a weird business, you know, and very, very hard. Some, you know, I know that a lot of the Tribe fans, some of them want to get into the business. And George, if I could just have a couple of minutes, it's important because, you know,
that's fun.
My assistant was saying, oh, we've had a lot of people that want to be a writer or a composer. There's a young lad who was asking advice about screenwriting and doing music, and the advice that I can give is to write, you know, to respect the profession, those around you, to don't be cynical, to write, you know, writers write, and never give up and never lose sight of what your vision is, because you're the writer. And I got frustrated in Hollywood because, you know, believe it or not, some people, there was one very A-list actor, and I'm not able to, you know, reveal the name because you have to sign non-disclosure agreements. But their children were going to be involved, and they're saying, "Can we have dinosaurs in here?" You know, you think dinosaurs, you know, it just won't work. You know, it was crazy. And then other people were saying, "Oh, let's get the adults installed on." It defeats the whole concept.
Point of the tribe. Yeah.
You know what I mean? The whole thing becomes crazy. So, you know, you've got to. You've got to remain truthful. Otherwise, I could just sell the rights and let them go and do what they want to do, you know. But I couldn't do that because I'm not motivated by that. That's not what motivates me. And so I'm going to keep trying, George, and I'll never give up. And hopefully there might be a sequel one day. There might be a movie. But if it is, it's always going to be protected, rightly or wrongly. It's going to be the way... Yeah, we want to do it. And that's the same with the books. You know, the books, love them or hate them, are the way that I want them to be, you know. And it's not an egomaniac thing. It's not being precious. It's just, you know, we're not secretaries who take dictation. You know, we're writers. And for anybody aspiring to write, you go and write and protect your vision and do it with passion. And it can bring a lot of joy. You know, you can't live your life trying to be what others expect it to be. You'll never be free, you know. And
perfect.
You know what I mean? I mean, it's you've got to do what you love doing, and that's what we're doing. And I love the game. I mean, I'm not a gamer, but I love how it's developing. I love the passion of our developer. She's tremendous, really great integrity and respects the creative integrity, and Hollywood, sometimes they don't. They throw their cigars at you, and if they think, hey, we're, you know, it's terrible. I mean, they don't honor very often, not all of them. I mean, some are terrific, but I mean, I'm talking about the men in suits, you know, the people that hold the purse strings, that they, and life isn't that way. I mean, it's, you know, creative people and people like Rob Cohen, tremendously gifted man who, you know, had such wonderful ideas. He would have done such a great job, you know. And but, you know, onwards and upwards, we keep going, you know.
And definitely. That's been rather fascinating. I want to thank you, obviously, for your time of coming on again. It's been another fantastic interview. We've learned a lot, as always. As I said, really appreciate your time. Have you got anything else you kind of want to sort of plug before we close the show this evening?
Well, just to wish all the tribal brothers and sisters around the world, I hope you're all well and safe and happy, and you know, it's still a crazy time, isn't it, with COVID? And you know, I just, as always, I'm always touched and humbled, really, as the whole team, the cast, we talk about it all the time, how amazed we are at the loyalty and support, you know, which is very, very special and means a lot. And that's very motivates us to keep going. It certainly motivates me. And that's why I'm delighted to bring the Tribe game, the audiobooks, and hopefully lots more in the tribal fandom, George, you know, we'll keep
it.
And I'm grateful to you, George.
Thank you, as I said, very much for your time this evening. We'll definitely, as I said, hopefully do another podcast where we can kind of go into the seasons. I think a lot of the fans would like to hear particularly some of the backstage stuff, particularly some of the characters, maybe some of the stuff that didn't happen, that could have happened. I think, obviously, that's a very fascinating subject that's probably been sort of not explored yet.
Yeah, I think that would be great, George. I'm happy to do that. We'll link him back. I mean, credit to you. You originally, a number of years ago, actually, were after me to do a podcast, and we didn't get around to it. But, you know, you precipitated these lockdown podcasts with the Tribecast, and I hope the Tribal Brothers and Sisters, they seem to have enjoyed those, and I'll keep doing more of those, and we'll with the game, with the audiobooks, with you know, I might do another version, an up-to-date version of Keeping the Dream Alive, to bring that right up to date. I mean, I think it was Gemma's, whoever's idea it was, to maybe do some behind-the-scenes photos and to do a commemorative edition. We can do that, and I might release the screenplay. I'll have a word with our publishers on that. But overall, I mean, you know, my final in closing, George, it would just be to send lots of love to everybody in Tribe World, and so keep well, keep safe, keep happy, be kind to yourself, you know, keep chasing your dreams, keep the dream alive, whatever that dream is, never give up. And thank you for your support, and thank you, George, for your time.
No problem.
It's late for you. I know you'll have to go and get into your world of dreams and have a kip and a sleep, and
yeah,
I'll get on. It's Sunday here in New Zealand. No, I'm in Australia. God, I forget where I am these days, but I mean,
no, it's fine. So,
and it's not, and we'll connect again, George. So all the best to you and your family, and
thank you.
And you keep well and safe as well, George.
Yeah, you too. I really appreciate, obviously, you coming on the show again, and thank you for your time and answering all the questions. As I said, I look forward to buying the game and the books. As soon as they're out, I'll sort of obviously I'll buy them. I'm quite looking forward to it.
That's great, George. Thank you very much. All the very
best. Fun. Bye, yeah, everybody. Nice to speak to you as well.
And you, George.